In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
Episode of For Whom the Podcast Tolls here on December 22nd, 2015. This is the official podcast of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site. I'm Daniel Black, writer for Whom the Cowbell Tolls, and I am not joined by Ethan Lee, fellow writer for Whom the Cowbell Tolls. He is not available to join us. He is back home in Texas or somewhere hiking. I guess that's more important than doing the show. So I'm here. I'm riding solo today. The first time I've had to do this. I know Ethan had to do it for the Egg Bowl recap, which was a very bad show to do the Egg Bowl recap. And this is a similar situation because I really have nothing to talk about. I've got a couple things, too. Hopefully I can put enough time together talking about these topics to make a full show. But Mississippi State defeated Tulane Saturday afternoon, 69-59. I'm going to talk about that. Mississippi, a baseball poll came out. The collegiate baseball preseason poll came out on Monday, yesterday, today as I record, and I'll talk about that. I don't really know much about that, but I'll just give my two cents on that. And we've got some questions. We've actually got a lot of questions. I appreciate whoever was on the For Whom the Cowbell Tolls Twitter account for retweeting my tweet about needing questions, because we got a good bit of questions. But we'll start with Mississippi State's 69-59 victory over Tulane on Saturday at the Humphrey Coliseum. Just some quick notes. This game was pretty strange. It was a pretty strange game in that, particularly in the second half. The first half sort of was just like any normal basketball game. It was pretty back and forth, very evenly matched, no real separation in the first half until the last 3 or 4 minutes. The last 3 or 4 minutes of the first half, Mississippi State was able to make some separation. It was 31-30 at one point in the second half with just over 30 minutes left. Mississippi State was able to get the gap to 38-32 and ultimately came into halftime with a 40-32 lead, and that was due in very much large part, a majority of the work for Mississippi State in the first half. And our leading scorer in the game was Malik Newman, who we sort of was a little bit worried about because we know that he started cramping up and got a little bit injured in the Florida State game. We were hoping he would come back, and he certainly did, being our leading scorer with 15 points. He had 13 points in the first half, certainly struggled in the second half, but really led the way for Mississippi State in that first half, where Mississippi State had a 6-point lead. And then in the second half, just sort of everything seemed to fall apart for Mississippi State. The beginning of the second half was just all Tulane all the time. I wrote a recap of this game on For Whom the Cowbell Tolls, where I have everything outlined. I'll pull that up really quickly, but pretty much Tulane, we were up 40-34 going to halftime, and they found themselves up 51-43 at one point, which I guess is a 18-3 run. I believe that's what that is, if my math is correct. I'm trying to pull up my recap here so I have everything in front of me outlined. Let's see here. Excuse me. It was an 18-3 run, but it ended up being a 20-5 run by Tulane. And they took a 9-point lead, 54-45, with just 12 minutes to go. And I'm sure a large majority, if not all, Mississippi State fans at this point, knowing this team and how they performed this year, sort of gave up, sort of threw their hands in the air and said, hey, it's over. Unless you're some incredible optimist, which I know a couple people that are. Ethan. I know Ethan actually didn't watch this game or listen to it because he was out hiking. What's with Ethan and hiking? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. Ethan, if you're listening, you're gonna have to explain why you love hiking so much. Maybe do it on the next show or something. I don't know. But anyways, they jumped out to a 20-5 run, and I thought the game was over. I didn't think Mississippi State was able to come back. And even if we did come back, we better do it fast. And that's definitely what happened. Mississippi State then went on absolute fire. A 15-0 run, taking a 60-54 lead for Mississippi State, and ultimately closed the game on a 24-5 run, ultimately winning 69-59, that 10-point victory. But once again, it was an evenly matched first half, and then just the definition of a tale. It's not a tale of two halves. It was a tale of 2 10-minutes, I guess, in that second half. Tulane ultimately dominating the first half of the second half, if that makes sense. And Mississippi State absolutely dominating the second half of the second half. But just looking at player stats, as I said, Malik Newman led the game with 15 points. Craig Sword had 14. And this was a player that we thought was not going to play. Tweet said that he was warming up but was not going to find any action. Gavin Ware, who had the bone bruise, a knee bruise from the Florida State game, had to come out of the Florida State game. Looked like he was in a lot of pain, was limping. I was worrying that his injury was going to be a lot worse than it ended up being. Very fortunate that it was just a bone bruise in his knee. But Gavin Ware comes out with, like, maybe in the first 5 minutes of the game. We no one was expecting him to play. No member of the media, no one on Twitter. I was not expecting him to play. And he just comes out and he's our third leading scorer with 12 points. And also tacking on 9 rebounds. So nearly a double-double for an injured Gavin Ware. So a very, very, very good performance for Gavin Ware as usual. Looking at some other stats, this was a game for Mississippi State. It was strange when you look at the stats because Mississippi State this year, the main struggle when you just look at the stats is defense. If you just look at the score, if you don't look at it, never mind looking at the stats. If you just look at the score of all Mississippi State's games, or at least a majority of them, the biggest problem is defense. We give up way too many points. Just looking here at the schedule, giving them 88, 7, 76, 105, 100, or sorry, 74, 70, 73, 72, 90, et cetera. Defense is the main problem. This is the best defensive game we've played all year. There is no doubt. They were from the field. They were able to shoot the ball relatively well, 41%. And then you look at their 3-point shots. They were just jacking up threes. In particular, that second part of the second half, trying to get back in the game, they were just jacking up random threes. They go 4 of 24 from behind the arc for an abysmal 16.7%. They could not hit a three to save their lives. So overall, although they did shoot 41% from the field, our defense came up huge. That was really big for Mississippi State. Our defense really came up in the clutch. It was a very great defensive performance from Mississippi State. Offensively, it was an overall solid performance. It wasn't terrific. I mean, only putting up 69 points compared to how Mississippi State's offense has been performing this year, knowing that this is a much improved Bulldog offense from the year before, it was not terrific, but it was overall solid, shooting 38.2% from the field and 38.9% from beyond the arc. Not bad. But the biggest thing for Mississippi State points wise were free throws, and they fouled us. I'm gonna see here are the fouls. They fouled us 21 times. That's not how you win a basketball game, Tulane, by the way. Fouling us 21 times. And I remember last year we struggled. One of our biggest weaknesses was shooting free throws. We were a very bad free throw shooting team last year, and I've said this before and time and time again on the show that our free throw shooting has improved dramatically, and it showed here, getting fouled 21 times and then ultimately making 20 of 26 free throws, which is 76.9%. So 20 of our 69 points came from free throws. Once again, not a great offensive performance, but we really lucked out shooting free throws. That was huge for us. A couple of other weaknesses overall this year are turnovers and fouls. I definitely stressed this in my recap in the article, and I will stress this now. Mississippi State only turned the ball over, Oh, I just had it. give me a moment here. 9 turnovers. I'm sorry about that. We only turn over 9 times, which is a drastic improvement from past games. And they were only able to put up 6 points off turnovers. So 6 points off turnovers, which is really big. Only turning the ball over 9 times, and they're not being able to capitalize from those 9 turnovers. Fouls is another problem, and we fouled them 12 times, which is not ideal. But with that being said, their free throw shooting was absolutely horrendous. They couldn't make a 3, they couldn't make a free throw. As mentioned earlier, they shot 16.7% from beyond the arc, and they shot 5 of 11, which is 43.5% from the free throw stripe, which is not ideal in terms of trying to win a basketball game. But once again, it was just a really, really weird game. If when you look at the game, the score 69-59, the score was 40-34 at halftime. At halftime, especially in Mississippi State's end, I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be a high scoring game. Scoring 40 points in the first half, and they're scoring 34, which is not bad at all. This is going to be a high scoring offensive game. And then we go out to the second half, we can't do anything. In the latter part of the second half, they couldn't do anything. So really, a majority of the offensive problems came in the second half. For Tulane in the latter part of the second half, for Mississippi State in the former part of the second half, and this game could have been much more high scoring if there was consistent play throughout the second half. But there certainly that was not the case at all. But for Mississippi State, for those who sort of just take this win over a now 6-6 team and say, good, you know, we won, woo, this is a huge win. I can't stress this enough. This is a gigantic win. Mississippi State, we just lost 2 consecutive games to Missouri, Kansas City, which is an opponent we shouldn't lose to. And we lose to Florida State in... We get absolutely creamed by Florida State, losing by 24 points. Of course, Florida State's a good opponent, but still losing by 24 points hurts a team, whoever we lose to. Coming off of 2 consecutive losses, getting to under 500, right after we got that momentum being winning 3 consecutive games against Missouri State, UT Martin, and Texas Southern, we get that momentum back. Then we just lose these 2 consecutive games, get under 500. This game's huge in terms of momentum. We only have, after this, we only have 2 more non-conference games before we get into the SEC slate, and we jump into the SEC slate with some of the best teams in the conference. Texas A&M and Kentucky are 2 of our first 3 conference games, and we see Kentucky. They're not the Kentucky of last year, but they're still Kentucky. They still have all the talent in the world. They are the Kentucky Wildcats. They are the premier, or at least one of, UCLA or Kentucky. You can go back and forth on that argument all you want, but it is, in my opinion, it is the premier college basketball program in the country. And we have to travel to Kentucky on January the 12th, and our first conference game is Rick Stansbury's return on the 6th of January against Texas A&M. We see Texas A&M. They've knocked off 2 ranked teams, maybe more. I know of 2 ranked teams. They just beat Baylor, I believe, on Saturday. Who was ranked 16th, I believe, somewhere around there. But they defeated Baylor. The Texas A&M is a really good team. They are loaded with talent under Billy Kennedy and Rick Stansbury doing work in the recruiting department. So that's going to be a really difficult game. Arkansas is sort of struggling, and they're our second conference game. We're traveling over to Fayetteville. We could possibly get that. But we start off with a gauntlet. This is a gauntlet of the SEC. Texas A&M at Arkansas, at Kentucky, versus Tennessee, at Florida, Ole Miss, at South Carolina. And you may not, and if you know something about South Carolina, they're 10-0 right now. They just beat Clemson. And Clemson is usually a very good basketball program. They're not bad this year. South Carolina 10-0. So this win over Tulane is huge, getting us to 500. If we can get these wins over Northern Colorado and North Carolina Central on the 23rd and the 31st, that can put us over 500, 2 games over 500 at 7-5, entering this SEC gauntlet. It would be huge for us. It's huge for us to get this W over Tulane, and if we can get these next 2 wins over Northern Colorado and North Carolina Central, those would be absolutely huge. So that's my basketball talk. Mississippi State wins 69-59. Beck in action on Wednesday, December the 23rd, in Jackson against Northern Colorado. We'll talk about that either preview it and recap it on the Thursday show, or we'll just do like we did last week and just recap it. We'll just see, but I won't preview it on this show. But yeah, that's my basketball talk. Bulldogs win 69-59, a very big win for Mississippi State over Tulane. And now into some baseball. It's still 2.5 months away until baseball season starts, looking to rebound from the very disappointing year of last year. But Mississippi State ranked 11th in the preseason collegiate baseball poll, 11th in the country. Excuse me. And when I look at this, I'll tell you this, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of this team. I know it's loaded with talent. We have a lot of talent from plenty of recruiting classes, but when you look at it, we lose guys like Ross Mitchell and Wes Ray and Preston Brown and Seth Heck, and I'm not listing plenty of other players, but those were sort of just key core guys in our team. And those key core guys were on a team that went 24-30 last year. So I've seen all over Twitter, I know the Mississippi State baseball account has tweeted it and posted on Instagram that, you know, guys like Aaron Fitt and Kendall Rogers, I know they're not a part of collegiate baseball, but still guys like them who are probably the two premier baseball writers in the country, certainly the two people I trust the most. I don't know what my opinion matters, but it's certainly, but Fitt and Rogers are certainly the two people that I trust the most. They're expecting a lot of Mississippi State. They look at the pitching staff, in particular Dakota Hudson, says that we're very talented, and that we're sort of the sleeper team, I guess. And you know, in my opinion, it's just I'll believe it when I see it. I think that we're a postseason team. I'll always think that Mississippi State's a postseason team, particularly with the talent that we have. But I don't see us making it to a super regional or certainly to Omaha this year. After last year, I don't have a lot of confidence. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised. If we maybe host a regional or make it to the supers, something like that, I'd be very much happy. I'd be ecstatic. I'll be through the roof. But I just don't see us as the 11th best team in the country this year. I just don't see it. I hope we are. I hope we can possibly get higher than that this year. But I just don't see it. And you can call me a pessimist, which I am one. I am the definition of a pessimist. Ethan would talk to you all day about that. I can agree with him that I'm a pessimist. But I just don't see us being the 11th best team in the country. Right now, I'm just looking at the Mississippi State press release. I presume that Kyle Niblett wrote, if I would have to guess. And they're just talking about Dakota Hudson, guys like Jacob Robson, Ryan Gridley, John Holland, Gavin Collins, guys like that, which are key parts of this team. I certainly agree with it, bringing guys like that, and then Brent Rooker coming back, among others. But I really just don't see this being a tremendous team. And I hate saying it, but I just don't see it. So, you know, I think that we could possibly make it to a regional, as I said earlier. I think this is a postseason team. I certainly don't think this is a team that'll go 24-30 next year or this coming year. I think we should make it to a regional, but I think we should be happy with a regional. If you're expecting College World Series, if you're expecting a Super Omaha National Championship hosting a regional, I recommend you stop, because I really don't think that we're going to be that tremendous this year. But we are ranked 11th according to collegiate baseball in the preseason poll. I'd be very much happy if we could end up being the 11th best team in the country by the end of the year. But yeah, 11th best team in the country. Other SEC teams, Florida's number one, Vanderbilt's number three, Texas A&M's number five. Let's see, LSU's number seven. Looking for teams, Arkansas, coming off of their Omaha appearance, their sort of late rally is at 24. Kentucky's at 29. Missouri's at 34. Missouri was not terrible last year. Certainly great in the first part of the year. South Carolina's 35. And unless I'm missing someone, that's the SEC teams. So, and I'm just going to look really quickly here just to, I'm looking just for other teams that we're playing that's in this. UCLA, I'm looking for them. They're 10th. We play UCLA this year. We play Oregon in a three-game series. They're 14th. And I guess I'm a little just too lazy to look for the remainder of the teams, the non-conference teams that we play. that are in the rankings. But yeah, that's just that. And we're going to have a very tough schedule coming up. And once again, I can't stress it enough. I don't think we're going to be tremendous. I think we're going to be good, but I don't think we're going to be tremendous this year. If that was just hot air, a bunch of hot air baseball talk. I haven't done much research on this year's baseball team. A lot of research. I know what we're losing, and I know some things we're bringing back. But I'll certainly dive into it more, and I'm sure Ethan has a couple of comments that we can talk about at a later time. But yeah, that's my baseball talk, ranked 11th in collegiate baseball's preseason poll. So now I don't know how long this show has gone, because I don't have a timer on this, but we're just going to get into some questions. We got a lot of questions. Our first one is from Slime Dog Millionaire at Slimy Jack 30. His question: what's the deal on Damian Williams? Is he going to transfer, or he'll be the, or will he be the starter? Ethan has a much stronger opinion on this, and he saw this tweet in our mentions on the podcast Twitter mentions, because we share the account. And he texted me his comments, but I'll go ahead and give mine first, because, you know, I'm here. I've believed since the spring game that the starting job for Mississippi State in 2016 is Nick Fitzgerald's. It's his to lose. And I believe that. I really think it's just a two-man show between Fitzgerald and Staley. We saw Damian Williams redshirt this year. And I don't really know if it was actually officially announced by the school or by the university or Dan Mullen, but I know that he redshirted, didn't see any playing time in what would be his junior year in 2015. But I think that this is Nick Fitzgerald's job to lose. If I would have to guess, if it's either transfer or starter, I would say that there's a better chance that Damian Williams transfers than starts. I really don't think he will start. I mean, and it's very disappointing knowing that Damian Williams pretty much saved our season in 2013, when you really think about it. And when really the legacy of the 2013 team and that end run will forever be remembered as Dak's comeback in the Egg Bowl. That's in Dak's sort of rise going into the 2014 season. And I understand that, but the unsung hero will be Damian Williams. Tyler Russell started the Arkansas game in Little Rock. excuse me. Grab some water here. That was a bad cough. But anyways, Damian Williams came into the Alabama, started playing in the Alabama game. He was actually going to redshirt his freshman year. I believe he played in the Alcorn game against Alcorn State, or the Alcorn State game, is when they burned his redshirt. But he came into the Alabama game, played a little there. Then he came into the Arkansas game. Tyler Russell started the Arkansas game, was injured, but was starting anyways, and he got injured even more in that Arkansas game, didn't come back for the remainder of the season. And Damian Williams comes in, and he saves the season. We're 4-6 at that time. They're 3-7? Yeah, they're 3-7. We're 4-6. We need to win out against Arkansas and Ole Miss to make it to a bowl. And he comes in and pretty much saves the season. He, in overtime, tied up at, oh, this is killing me that I don't remember the score. 17-17, I believe. 17-17? I think so. Tied up at 17-17 in overtime, and Damian Williams goes in on the first play of the first overtime. Bloop! 25-yard touchdown run. He saved the season for us. And he played the first three quarters of the Egg Bowl, and he kept us in that game 10-7. 10-10 by the time Dak Prescott came in. So he kept us in that game. Damian Williams is the unsung hero of that 2013 team, and I guess he got injured going into 2014, and really he just has not been hurt a lot of since. And since then we've gotten Elijah Staley and Nick Fitzgerald that, in my opinion, are going to beat him out. I think Damian Williams' sort of peak will be the second string. And I think that this job is Nick Fitzgerald's to lose. Nick Fitzgerald, I kind of hate saying this, but he's sort of a white Dak. When you think about it, he's taller than Dak, almost weighs as much as Dak, similar playing. He's the Mullen quarterback. If you thought Dak Prescott was the Mullen quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald is sort of the next in line there. The passing of the baton from Dak to Nick Fitzgerald would almost, knowing that Nick Fitzgerald is inexperienced and he's going into his sophomore year, it wouldn't be seamless, but it would be a very smooth transition from Dak Prescott to Nick Fitzgerald is what I'm saying. So I think that it's Nick Fitzgerald's job to lose, and if you're asking me transfer or starter, I don't have a definite answer there. But if which one's more likely, in my opinion, I'd say transfer. But these were Ethan's thoughts. He says, if he stays, he's likely, and I'm just quoting him verbatim, if he stays, he's likely going to win the job. If he transfers, he'll probably go somewhere like Louisiana Tech or an FCS school and be their starter. There's an outside possibility he switches positions and stays here. There's also a chance that he's the starter at the beginning of the season, but either Fitz or Staley could win the job by the end of the year. Ethan's belief from the beginning that this is Damian Williams, he's going to start. We have differing opinions there, and we usually do have differing opinions on things when you think about it. But he thinks that Damian Williams will start. I don't. I think it's definitely more of a possibility that Nick Fitzgerald Damian Williams transfers than starts. But that's my opinion. I hope I answered your question, Slime Dog Millionaire. Next, we got a series of questions from Lewis, MSU Lewis on Twitter. He says, Daniel, what upcoming movie are you most excited about? I don't watch many movies. It's weird. I don't watch many movies. I don't have a definite favorite, just overall movie. But if there is a movie I'm excited to see, it's probably the most unoriginal and generic answer at this time, and it's probably Star Wars. People would burn me at the stake for saying this, but I've never seen a full Star Wars movie. I've seen bits and pieces of The Empire Strikes Back, and I think I've seen bits and pieces of Revenge of the Sith, but that's it. I haven't seen a full Star Wars movie before. And I know the basic what happens. I mean, I know that, spoiler alert, here coming up, that Darth Vader is Luke's father, and that Anakin is Darth Vader and all that stuff, and, Han Solo and Princess Leia, they're married, and Princess Leia is Carrie Fisher, and Han Solo is Harrison Ford, yada, yada, yada. I know all that. Yoda, he's a small green man, whatever. But I'll probably end up seeing Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Episode 7, I guess. I'm pretty excited to see that. But before I do, I am definitely going to watch Vegas Rebs on Twitter, and Justin Strawn recommended this to me. Then I watch it in the machete order, 6 movies, or at least 5 movies, because Episode 1 is worthless, apparently. I don't remember the machete order. I'll have to pull up an article on them. I'm too lazy to do so. But yeah, to answer your question, Star Wars. Daniel, which article have you received the most backlash from? There are two that comes to mind I'm perfect. No. I haven't really received much backlash in any of my pieces, because a majority of my pieces don't spark much controversy. But my first one, I wrote about how Mississippi State having to travel to play UMass in 2016, how it made sense. That got some negative comments. And I also wrote an article that was in response to an article that Barrett Salee wrote. And I hate that I wrote it, because I ended up being completely wrong and Barrett Salee ended up being completely right. It was a piece that I wrote that I researched for a day and a half and published that ended up being completely wrong by the time the season ended. But Barrett Salee wrote that Southern Miss was the best possibility of Mississippi State's of having a trap game. And I wrote that Louisiana Tech, Kentucky, and Troy were better better chances of a trap game than Southern Miss. And all three were dead wrong. But I got a little bit of backlash from that, particularly from the Facebook crowd. But everyone on the Facebook crowd, if you've seen the For Whom the Cowbell Tolls Facebook comments, there's a negative comment on every single one of your articles somewhere. Like, if Mississippi State ever wins a national championship something and there's an article posted about it, there will be a negative comment somewhere on Facebook. You can guarantee that. Next, Daniel, thoughts on the upcoming baseball season? I pretty much answered that question earlier. I don't think we're going to be tremendous, but I think we'll be okay. I don't think we're the 11th best team in the country, as collegiate baseball says, but I think we're a regional team. And finally, Daniel, what do you plan on majoring in college? You know, my end goal is to be a sports writer. This is what I want to do. The reason why I'm doing this right now is because I want to get a head start on my career. I want to be maybe a radio personality, something involving sports and media. And I don't know. I don't necessarily know. And I'm going to Mississippi State. Really, I'm pretty much firmly decided on that. I don't know what stuff Mississippi State offers that ultimately leads me into that. But whatever they have, that's probably what I'll end up going into. I don't have a definite title, but something involving journalism, I guess. Journalism's, I guess, is the generic title. So thank you for your questions, Lewis. Question from, our friend J-Dog. Yes. Yeah. Currently, his little name here, his Twitter name is High Five, in all caps. Question, and I love this question, how refreshing is it to be able to do the show without having to worry about Ethan's horrible takes? It's beautiful. It is absolutely spectacular. I know Ethan would probably be bashing me on some stuff right now if he were here, and doing the show alone kind of sucks because it's just you and it's just you rambling. But when you think about it, if you have a co-host that is sort of the opposite personality than you, because I'm a major pessimist, he's a major optimist, I've seen bad Mississippi State football, he's only seen good Mississippi State football. So we have different personality types. It's good every once in a while that we don't have to argue. It's nice being just me. From the Large Dog Trademark, our friend Mr. Vanderlip at KT Vanderlip on Twitter. Number one, have you heard if Dak is going to play in the Senior Bowl? I was actually asked this by an Ole Miss buddy of mine. Is he not playing? And I haven't heard anything. I don't think he is. I know that Jake Coker got an invite, but that's all I know. Number two, what's your favorite Christmas movie? Christmas Vacation, and there is nothing close to it. I think I've seen Home Alone. I think it's good. I don't necessarily think it's tremendous. And really, now that you think of it, Elf. Oh my God. Elf or Christmas Vacation? Because Elf is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. Christmas Vacation is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. I'm going to say it's a tie between Elf and Christmas Vacation. Number three, what's your favorite Christmas song? I don't know. I don't listen to much Christmas music. I'm not much of a fan of Christmas music. I'm just going to go with the most generic answer and say Jingle Bells. I don't know. Number four, which Christmas movie do you wish would just go away? I know that there is an answer to this question somewhere. There is a definite answer to this question. But as I said earlier that I don't watch many movies, and really the three Christmas movies that I've seen are Elf, Home Alone, and Christmas Vacation. So I don't necessarily know of any others. So if there's a definite answer for those people out there, tweet me, please, at dblack97 on Twitter. Number five, does the women's basketball team get a banner to hang from the Puerto Rico tournament? I don't see why not. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't see why not. Do it. It was a good tournament for Mississippi State, going 3-0. Bulldogs now 11-1, currently number 8th in the country. So Mississippi State women's team, really, really, really good. Number six, almost forgot the important one. I love this. How's it going? Trying to do my best Ethan voice. How's it going? I guess I was okay. I'm fine for the 33rd time. Thank you. Of course, Ethan always says, how's it going at the beginning of the show? And I guess Mr. Vanderlip has to fill the void, knowing that he is not here. And our final question is probably my favorite one, from our good buddy Charlie Burris. And I'm glad that he asked a question. Will the Grizzlies, and this could be ended up being a 10-minute spiel on my part, will the Grizzlies ever be good again now that the grit and grind era is dead? And he said the grizz and grind, but I'm presuming he meant to say grit and grind era is dead. It's heartbreaking to know that the grit and grind era is either, I mean, you can make the argument that it is dying and is definitely nearing death. It's in the final stages of its life, or just dead. because I was one when the Grizzlies came to Memphis. Once again, I live in Memphis. I was born and raised in Memphis. I currently live in Memphis. I'm a Memphian. And I was one when the Grizzlies first year in Memphis. and I'm too young to remember the days of Hubie Brown. And I vaguely remember those couple of years when Mike Fratello led us to the playoffs, and the days of, you know, Pau Gasol and Mike Miller and Shane Battier, all those, Jason Williams. I'm way too young to remember Jason Williams. But really, my first introduction, true introduction to Grizzlies basketball was the days of Mark Iveroni as our head coach, back when we absolutely sucked. You know, if there is a close representation to a team now that was like the Grizzlies back then, of course, I don't think the Grizzlies were as bad as what this team is now, but the Philadelphia 76ers, we were close to that range in terms of absolute just suckiness, if that's a word. But then, you know, Lionel Hollins becomes head coach, and we get Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley. And we make it to the playoffs in 2011, beat the Spurs in the first round, go to the playoffs in 2012, go to the Western Conference Finals in 2013. Forever my favorite season of Grizzlies basketball, and it'll be really, really, really hard to beat that. I still hate you Spurs for sweeping us. Going to the playoffs in 2014, and then going to the second round of 2015. But you know, when Lionel Hollins was fired after the 2013 season, I'm still angry at the front office for their doing that. I'm still angry to this day. That's when things started to go downward. We were not great of a team in 2014. We made it to the first round, and really, in 2014, in that first round, we had a 3-2 lead in Oklahoma City. I'm a nice chewer, sorry. We had a 3-2 lead on Oklahoma City in 2014 in that first round, and we just couldn't get it done. I went to the game in the Grizzlies in FedEx Forum, Game 6, and we get to clinch the series and go on to the Western Conference semifinals, and we got absolutely annihilated. Absolutely annihilated. And then the next game, Zebo was out, Tony Allen was out. And it absolutely sucked. Game 7, and we put up a good fight in Game 7 against OKC in 2014, but we just didn't have the firepower to get it done. And then last year we were a good team last year, a really good team last year. Breezed by the Trailblazers in the first round, and then we just had to meet Steph Curry and the Golden State freaking Warriors in the second round, and they pulled the Cleveland Cavaliers on us. We were the original Cleveland Cavaliers. We took a 2-1 lead, and things were all dandy and beautiful, and they ended up winning 3 consecutive games. And after that, we suck now. We are not a good team. We are, I believe, right now 15-14, 17-16. I think it's 15-14. But we're not good, and it's terrible. And, you know, the grit and grind era is what I will always remember as a Memphis Grizzlies fan. And his question is, will the Grizzlies ever be good again now that it's over? Yeah, it can be good again. It's just all in the hands of Chris Wallace. You know, who can he get? We have to get some good guys. And really, the grit and grind era is dying. If it's not dead already, it is on its final breaths. If we're going to make a move to... Really, the first move that we have to do, and it sucks saying this, but we're going to have to get rid of somebody in that core three. Probably Zach Randolph. And Zach Randolph is... probably my favorite Grizzly ever. You know, Zach Randolph has been sort of the face of the Memphis Grizzlies over these last 5 years. And he's been sort of the face of the grit and grind mentality that we've adopted. But if we're going to have to make a move, we're going to have to make a move now for the future. And I think we're starting to do that with getting Mario Chalmers, getting Mario Chalmers for being Oudry, but we're gonna have to make a move now, and it sucks. And the Grizzlies fans who are listening right now can really agree that this has been the golden age of Grizzlies basketball, and it's ending, and we're gonna have to deal with it. We're gonna have to make some moves now, and if it requires trading one of those core three of Gasol, Randolph, and Conley, we're going to have to do it. And once again, it really sucks, but we're going to have to do it. But can we be successful? Yes, we can be. I'm confident that we can. We're not going to be great this year. I don't know the standings in the Western Conference right now, but I don't imagine that we're all that high. But I think that we're probably going to be a first-round playoff team this year. And then from now, unless we make some moves immediately for the future, we're not going to be great in the future. But we still can be successful. So, yeah, those are all the questions. Oh, my bad. My bad. Ethan sent me questions. Yeah, he texted me questions. He has to be a part of the show somehow, you know. So let me get these up. Okay, question number one. Dan Mullen has a knack of beating teams that are either inferior or as good as MSU, but has lost every bowl game after losing the egg. Why will Mississippi State win by 45 points? I believe that he is talking about the bowl game against NC State. I don't think we're going to beat NC State. I don't think we're going to win again. I don't think we're going to beat them by 45 points. But if he's trying, but if the question is, why will State win by 45 points? Ultimately means that I have to find reasons why we're going to win by 45 points. Dak Prescott goes off. Dak Prescott has a performance of 600 or more total yards, running and passing. He has a Kentucky-type performance. Not Kentucky. He has an Arkansas-type performance. 7 touchdowns and over 500 yards total offense. And I meant to say 500 yards total offense. I was thinking of 7 touchdowns. That's 700 yards. 500 yards total offense, 7 touchdowns. And our defense has just to be absolutely locked down because we beat Arkansas by a point with Dak Prescott getting 7, with Dak getting 7 touchdowns and over 500 yards. But Dak has to... Excuse me. Dak has to go off. Our defense has to be locked down. That's all I can say. Next, Malik Newman has not had a stellar start to the year. Why is Patrick Beverley the greatest NBA player ever? For those who don't know, Patrick Beverley is a player for Ethan's beloved Houston Rockets. And I'm not a Rockets fan. And I really don't know anything about Patrick Beverley. So I don't know why he's the greatest NBA player ever. Sorry. If Dak Prescott is drafted by the Texans, who once again is Ethan's favorite team, do you think he'd feel dirty wearing red and blue? No. I know he hates those two colors together. He's tweeted about it before, but knowing that he's a part of an NFL team, regardless of whether he's the fifth string or the starter, or he's playing tight end or fullback or kicker or punter or whatever other position, no. So that will wrap it up for me. I hope I didn't go on too long and had too much hot air. I hope this was a decent show. I hope you didn't get too bored, if you're probably not, for those who are listening right now. But yeah, on Thursday, Ethan will hopefully be back, and we're going to talk about the upcoming basketball game against Northern Colorado, and I don't know what else. I just don't know what else. It'll be Christmas Eve on Thursday, so maybe we'll do something Christmas-themed. That'll be fun. But yeah, anyways, that'll wrap it up for this episode of Room the Podcast Tolls. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about the Northern Colorado game and pretty much everything I just said. But until then, thank you all for listening, and bye-bye, everybody.